51551 is our text line if you want to contact the programme, saturday@rte.ie for emails, and it's at SaturdayRTE on Twitter. Today I'm joined in studio by Damien English, Minister of State with responsibility for employment affairs and retail businesses, Sinn Féin spokesperson for enterprise, trade, employment and workers' rights, Louise O'Reilly, Labour Senator Marie Sherlock, spokesperson on employment affairs, and later in the show we'll be hearing from Lorna Fitzpatrick, President of the Union of Students in Ireland. But first, I want to go to Dr. Cillian de Gascoigne, Chairperson of the National Public Health Emergency Team's COVID-19 Advisory Committee. And we are very happy to have him in studio with us today because, of course, Cillian, the headlines are full of it. The newspapers are full of it. So many people now worried that further restrictions are on the way for other counties outside of the Dublin and Donegal restrictions we're now at. Can you give us a read of where we are, you believe we are at now in relation to that?
Yeah, hi Katie, thanks for having me on the show today. So nothing is inevitable in any of this, and I think it's really important for the other 24 counties to appreciate that. Obviously, there's been a lot of focus on Dublin and Donegal in the last couple of weeks. But we do know that across the country, there are other worrying trends. So we know that the number of cases increasing. We know that the number of the 7-day incidence is increasing, the 14-day incidence, the number of people in hospitals, the number of people in intensive care. So all of these are concerning signs. And we're obviously not yet in the depths of winter. So we're obviously concerned that if we get into a bad place now, it's going to be very difficult to get out of it in winter. So I think it's important from a NPHET perspective that we act early, that we act in a proportionate manner. But it's really important that the other counties don't look at Donegal and Dublin and think, oh, well, we're fine, so we don't have any concerns.
But when you hear the Taoiseach warning yesterday that the numbers, that he's been told by NPHET that the numbers in Cork are rising in a straight line, that was the phrase he used, that kind of exponential rising, that surely is heading in one direction only.
Not necessarily, I suppose. So each county is slightly different depending on where the cases have come from and depending what the numbers are, and also depends on the baseline that they're coming from. So Cork has been doing very well over the last number of months. So we don't, the people have this in their own hands to act. Unfortunately, we still obviously don't have a vaccine. We don't have a preventive measure. But what people can do is reduce their contacts, physically distance, and implement all of the public health messaging that we've been, you know, repeating ad nauseum since February and March. And I know people are probably tired of hearing that message. It would be great if we had some new intervention that we could introduce, but at this point in time we haven't. But people can control this themselves, and I think it's great to see recent or sort of more local data being made available recently, so people can look at their county, they can look at their local electoral area, and in essence sort of get some information about what's happening within their region.
That message has been going out all week, you know, half your social contacts. But of course, for many people, they can't. Like, for say, a school teacher has to face into that classroom of school children every day, or teenagers every day if they're teaching at second level. Many retail workers can't have the number of people they're going to be in contact with during the day. Is there a merit to, you know, being more specific about the public health advice we are now giving people in terms of the kind of contacts you absolutely should not be considering right now?
Well, I think it's really important for us to try and get the balance right, because we know how hard the stay-at-home restrictions of March and April were on people. So we want people to have a quality of life, but it just, we have to do things in a different way. So you're right, as a society, we have identified priorities around education, around healthcare, and around protecting our vulnerable groups. And what we're saying to people, what we're asking people to do, is outside of those settings to reduce their discretionary contacts. And you're right, some people have very few contacts and it's very difficult to reduce those any further. And in reality...
And they probably need those very few contacts.
Absolutely. And in reality, those individuals may not be driving the epidemic in their area. But what we do need to appreciate is that because of the fact that people can transmit either before they develop symptoms or even if they have no symptoms, that there are no zero risk activities. So I think sometimes and I think it's important for us as medical professionals to be clear in our messaging, when we're saying that something is, whether it's in level 2 or in level 3 or in level 1, when we're saying you can do it, what we're saying is that you can do it, but the question is, firstly, should you do it? And secondly, is if you decide to do it, you have to do it in a different way to how you would have done it 12 months ago.
Some experts coming out today saying, look, some parts of this country should be on level four now. And in exactly that line, that in level four, of course, there is very little social interaction allowed under those restrictions. Should you think that that in some cases where the numbers are really, really high, and we're talking about localised restrictions now coming in, perhaps in the cities, should we be considering level four for areas where you're really concerned about the numbers?
Everything is kept under review from a numbers perspective on a daily basis. At the moment, NPHET is meeting weekly, but the department and the Health Protection Surveillance Centre are reviewing the data on a daily basis. And if additional meetings are required, then they can be convened. So if we look at when the measures, typically when measures are introduced, it takes about 2 to 3 weeks for us to see the benefits. So it, just to take Dublin by way of example, we introduced, they moved to level three about a week ago now. I think the exact date was the 18th. So really what we would hope to see in Dublin is a stabilising, because generally speaking, because of the incubation period, the die is cast typically a week in advance. So those measures came into place a week ago. From this weekend,
so last week was a write-off, basically. Yeah.
Well, exactly. Those infections had already occurred. But if people have responded to the measures, the additional restrictions put in place last weekend, we should see the effect of those from this weekend and through this coming week. So in Dublin, we want to see that stabilisation. But we do monitor all of the data. And the thing is, we don't want...
Dublin? I know I hear what you're saying there, but there was reported comments from ministers who had been briefed, obviously, at Cabinet about where we were at with the numbers in Dublin in particular, that it would take a miracle to get Dublin off level three within the next couple of weeks, which is, you know, we were supposed to be in this level three for 3 weeks initially. Would you say it would be, we'd be going very, very well to not anticipate an extension of the level three in Dublin?
I suppose I don't want to be predicting what's going to happen in 2 weeks' time, and I hadn't heard those comments, but I think the message to people isn't going to change. We can't control this. We controlled it in the past and we can control it again. But the problem is we need to behave differently. These are behavioural changes. It's not a question of a short fix, because even if we do this for 3 weeks, and it said we've looked at other counties have done it, obviously Limerick did it, obviously, you know, Tipperary, for example, had very large outbreaks and could have slipped into a higher level, but didn't, controlled it because people follow the public health messaging.
OK, we can control that, but we can't really control what's coming across the border to us as is happening now in Donegal. And we know that there is absolutely transmission from travel across that border either way. How could we, apart from putting, as we have, we're hearing that there are Garda patrols now along the border at border crossings. But, you know, obviously the virus isn't going to stop for a guard. So how can we, like, is there a merit now in really upping the cooperation between, say, the contact tracers on this side of the border and over and in Northern Ireland?
Absolutely. I think one of the challenges we've always faced since the start of this pandemic was the fact that we have two jurisdictions on the same island. And to be fair, within the various departments of health and the two chief medical officers, they have engaged from the very beginning. And obviously, if we can cooperate across borders and have similar guidance in both jurisdictions, that's really helpful. But absolutely, my understanding certainly is that the app works across the island entirely. So from a contact tracing perspective, we should certainly be doing that.
But have we any sense of are we sending it over to Northern Ireland, or is Northern Ireland sending it to us? Have we any sense of what direction of travel mainly is happening?
I don't know that. I certainly don't have that information, and I'm not sure if we have it definitively at this point in time. But we do know that people, I think it's important that we don't just focus on obviously the border is a challenge, but even in other counties, we see, say, the likes of, say, Dublin and Kildare, Dublin and Wicklow, people travel across county boundaries here for work, for essential work, for essential retail, depending on where they live, and for education. So it's going to be very difficult, as you say, to stop a virus at any county boundary, whether it's an international border or just a county level.
And another, in reference to another area that we can't stop, or we've decided we're going to prioritise schools, is there any evidence now? I know the figure that I saw for children under 14, that they're accounting for 1 in 10 cases in the past 7 weeks. Is there any indication that that is climbing now that we have all the schools back?
Not significantly, no. If you look back at the sort of the trajectory we have been on as a country, the level of virus has
begun or started to increase around the end of June and through the start of July. And if you look at the growth rate since that time, it has really considered at a steady pace and hasn't really changed dramatically with the schools returning. Now, what we have seen from the schools returning is obviously a significant increase in demand from a testing perspective, and obviously there has been a small number of cases in certain schools. There haven't been any significant outbreaks, thankfully, at this point in time, and that will be in keeping what we saw with international experience. But as I said, the returning to school hasn't had a dramatic effect on the trajectory of infection within the country.
Okay, you mentioned testing there, and obviously this is your area of expertise. Okay, we've the 100,000 tests. It appears that we are now, you know, touching that ceiling. We're hearing of maybe 14,500 tests being done on a daily basis over the last week. And as you said there, a huge demand now coming because a lot of school children are obviously being put forward for tests. Will our testing capacity cope with what we're facing into over the coming weeks?
Yeah, so I suppose two elements to that. So first, what's interesting is we've seen the demand from schools has now sort of really plateaued and stabilised. So there was that initial surge as schools went back, but that's kind of stabilised a bit now, which is kind of what we expected to see. From the point of view of capacity, certainly, yeah, I think the capacity will be able to cope with what we would expect to see. But it's all part of, I suppose, the entire suite of measures. Testing and tracing is a very important component of the public health approach.
Sorry, just to be clear about that, are you saying 100,000 tests a week is enough? That's all we need to cope with.
Oh no, sorry, the capacity at the moment. There's been a lot of fixation, I suppose, on a particular number for the last number of months. But I suppose that
I remember
number,
some months ago talking to you about this. I agreed that it was NEFA that gave us that number to begin with.
Absolutely. But the number is continually kept under review to see what it needs to be. And obviously, the HSE has done a huge amount of work from a procurement perspective in identifying platforms, in putting equipment into all of the acute hospitals around the country, and ensuring that there's a resilience and a robustness that wasn't there back in March and April. So the number that's required.
Can I just quote back yourself to you from The Independent this week, where you told the Irish Independent that 100,000 figure is no longer enough to cope with anticipated demands on the system.
Absolutely. So what we've seen over the last 2 weeks, as you said yourself, as schools have gone back, is that we're monitoring a number of, I suppose, metrics. We're looking at the GP referrals coming into the system. We're looking at the capacity for swabbing within the community hubs. And then we're looking at the capacity for testing within the laboratories. And absolutely, what happened when the schools went back is that we breached. So the 100,000, I suppose, has been typically sort of classed as 15,000 a day. And what we saw was that there were more referrals coming into the system than that 15,000 a day.
And we know then, of course, that we had to suspend the testing, the serial testing in meat factories at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. And that has recommenced. But I think so that information feeds into the system, and that makes you realise that the capacity is not sufficient. So there is work ongoing to develop, to bring that capacity to a level that it needs to be. So what we want to do is...
Have we any idea of what that level is at this point?
So the HSE is working on those numbers, so I don't want to sort of speculate as to what it might be, but I think we will, from what we want to do from a testing perspective is that we want to be able to meet the demand that is there. There's been a huge fixation on numbers, which I can understand, but probably isn't helpful. Ultimately, we want to have capacity to test everyone who needs to be tested.
That German option, the German labs that we turned to earlier in the summer, are we turning back to them again now? Is that where we're going when we talk about increasing capacity?
No, so they have been kept, I suppose, on the field all through the summer, because in essence we want to have that spare capacity there. We want to have it in essence in our back pocket as a contingency if something happens on island for any particular reason, and if there are supply chain challenges. But we don't envisage that being the sort of the cornerstone of any strategy, but at the same time we were very grateful to them when they helped us back in the early days, and we still will keep those on.
But obviously if tests or swabs have to go to Germany, that's going to slow down turnaround times. That's not ideal.
No, it's not, absolutely, which is why we want to be testing on island. But at the same time, it makes sense to have that additional capacity if it's available.
Okay. Just before I let you go, contact tracing has become a huge talking point in the last week, because I think we were all, well, certainly I was surprised when we learned last week that we were only asking people about their contacts for 2 days prior to their testing positive. And now we're told that, where you see today, this week, that Dr. Ronan Glenn has written to the department saying we would like to go back to actually hunt down, to do detective work on where the virus is actually being sourced from. Why is that only happening now?
I think it's probably unfair to presume that it hasn't been happening. I know the comments that suggested, so the priority has been, so I suppose there are two separate elements. One is when people are likely to transmit infection. So that's within the 48 hours. So what we're trying to do in the first part of contact tracing, so say for argument's sake, I'm symptomatic, I'm tested today. So there are two elements to that. So therefore, I've been shedding for the last 48 hours. So the first component is who have I potentially infected or in that time frame. And those individuals get the two tests, as you know, they get tested on day naught, and they get tested on day naught, in essence, because they might be the source of the infection. And then they get tested on day 7 to see if I've given them the infection. So in the context of where I then acquired the infection, that's a separate part. So we can, and that would also have happened in the context of conversations with public health. There was no blanket suggestion of don't go back any further. Obviously, if
talking to people in public health during the week, my understanding is there simply isn't the resources there to because, as you say, the priority is who else has got it now, not where did it all come from to begin with.
Absolutely.
And that there simply isn't the resources there.
Yeah.
And that has left us vulnerable and not really having a good grasp on where all that what we now put down as community transmission is coming from. And I see reporting in today's Irish Times talking about countries who have really got a handle on this, like South Korea and others, Japan, another country, that they discovered that actually it was that piece of work, going back the 5 to 7 days and hunting down the virus, that proved to be more effective.
Yeah. Oh, no, absolutely. And I would agree completely on the resourcing issue. We know that our departments of public health have been under-resourced and are under-resourced. But I think my understanding is that the department and the minister have committed to addressing that issue. But you're right. Ideally, you get as much information as possible. And as I said, I think it's unfair to suggest that our public health doctors haven't been doing that through the course of this pandemic. But they have, obviously, as case numbers increase and as the pressure on the system increases, then yes, you're prioritising your actions at that point in time. But obviously, people would ask questions as to whether they might have been, you know, obviously you were asked about what our occupations are, what our
who might have been in contact with.
I don't want to give people the impression that it hasn't been happening at all. But yes, you're right. Until we get adequate resources in place,
yeah, we can't have that level of data available to us. Just finally, then, vaccine.
Yeah.
Latest projections on when we might look forward to having a vaccine in place.
I would. So again, it's difficult to predict what's going to happen, and no one really can have certainty. I think we've a huge number of candidate vaccines that are in clinical trials now. I think realistically, we're going to have to get through this summer on our merits and on our public health messaging. If we have a vaccine that's in place and that we can roll out, say in the middle of 2021, and have it in place for the following winter, I think that would be really a positive step.
The winter of 2022.
No, 2021. Sorry, yeah. Okay. But I think realistically, we're going through this winter with our current non-pharmaceutical interventions and our current public health messages. And that's why it's so important that people continue to bear with us and to hold firm on this, because there's no magic bullet coming in the next 6 months.
Testing at the airport, should we be doing it? Would it be effective? Would it...
Testing at an individual point in time in people who don't have symptoms is a limited approach and doesn't necessarily give you a huge amount of additional information. So it certainly, it can be a component.
We see internationally it's a huge part of other countries' strategies. We see this week that Irish people are now having to produce a test if we want to arrive in Germany.
Yeah, and that's a separate component. So the testing at airports thing, and I appreciate you're tight for time, testing at airports is a large discussion. And it's funny, in a lot of other countries that you're saying are doing,
if we had unlimited resources, would we have tests at the airport? Would that be part of the picture if we didn't have to worry about rationing resources?
No, I don't think it's still not. There are certain ways you can use testing at the airport, and testing before travelling can be a helpful approach. But realistically, you need that person to be tested at a second point in time, purely because, for example, say if I infect you or you infect me today, for the first 4 days or for the next 4 days, your test will be negative. We won't detect any virus because it won't have reached a level, it won't have replicated sufficiently to a level that we will be able to detect with our testing. However, if you or I were tested, we would take reassurance from that, and then we would travel to another country, and then we would start to shed virus. So as I said, testing at two points in time is really useful and gives you a lot of reassurance, but testing at a single point in time
If you detect virus, it's helpful. Obviously, you can stop people travelling. But the problem is you will miss at least 30% of people. It's saying allowing for a 14-day incubation period.
Yeah, but would catching 70% of cases not be a good hit rate?
But the problem is you won't catch 70% because the assay also has limitations. Right, okay. And the sensitivity of the assay is also strict. So as I said, it can be a component. I'm not suggesting that it should never be done, but I'm just saying it's not the magic bullet that maybe people think it might be.
OK, I would love to have you here for the whole hour, Killian, but unfortunately, we have to move on to the rest of the programme, but many thanks for joining us in the studio.
You.
And we'll take a break.
Tweet at Saturday RTE.
Welcome back to the programme. And just to remind you, we have Minister of State Damien English, Sinn Féin's Louise O'Reilly and Senator Marie Sherlock of the Labour Party in studio with us. Minister, you heard Killian de Gascoigne there talking about the precarious situation we are in so many places, saying it's not inevitable. What's your read in terms of how close to the edge we are for some of those regions in the country now that the numbers are on the increase?
Well, I wouldn't be portrayed to be an expert in figures, but if you analyse some of the counties, and I looked at some this week, that already there's a difference in the last 7 days compared to the previous 14 days, and it shows a more positive trend in some individual counties as well. I don't want to name counties. So that would show me that when we have a kind of a campaign around a particular county like Dublin or then Donegal, the rest of the country are hearing that messaging as well, and people are already changing their behaviour, which is a positive. Because, look, there's always a danger in July, August, September, people might get a bit fatigued with all this, a little bit relaxed. It's very hard to constantly always follow the regulations and always do the right thing. So I do think in the last couple of weeks, with all that commentary around and the changes with the level 3 in Dublin and out into Donegal, it has reinforced the message across the country, and I hope that will result in other counties not having to move levels, because none of us want that. And of course, the main thing here is to stop the spread of the virus through our counties. So nobody in government anyway wants to be increasing restrictions. It's the opposite you want to do. And I do think that we have a chance to get ahead of this.
I saw reports from Cabinet this week that whereas the Taoiseach Dailí Ó Mhaireadh might have been pushing for more, you know, faster reopening, and clearly that was the route we took over the summer. We had a roadmap which was basically thrown out the window, and we speeded that right up. But that in the last week that Dailí Ó Mhaireadh has basically looked at the numbers and has changed his tune.
Again, I think it'd been unfair of your analysis of the roadmap originally. It was very clear when that roadmap was put out at the start that there was the different timelines set out, but they could always change. And every decision along the way was made on the evidence at the time in relation to how the spread of the virus was happening and what was happening with that virus. So it did become the opportunity early in the summer to speed up some of the restrictions and removal of restrictions. That was purely because we had to move on with life and try to see, could we live with COVID? Could we get back to work? People are under pressure out there in relation to their job. Businesses are under pressure, so is the economy. So the Cabinet made the right decision all along the way, but it was always said that if it didn't work out and the virus behave in a manner that had to be curtailed again, that restrictions would be reimposed. And that's what's happened. Naturally, you don't want that, but you have to try these things, and and you follow the advice all the time.
Yeah, Louise.
Yeah, I think the messaging from the government was somewhat subpar, suboptimal, I think is actually what one minister described it on a programme I was on with her. and that doesn't help. Messaging needs to be clear. One thing is very obvious. People want to play their part. They want to follow the rules. They just need clear and unambiguous guidance. So, for example, on the day when they announced the five levels, they announced another level for Dublin, which is kind of 5.5. That's, you know, stuff like that doesn't help. But I do think, you know, people are stepping up to the plate. They are doing their absolute best. But then I read in the paper today that Minister Donnelly is saying that he believes that levels of testing need to be substantially increased. And then I have to ask the question, what was being done for the last 6 months? I mean, in March, when we were put into a very, very, very serious, very stringent lockdown, what happened, we were told at the time, was this needs to happen to create capacity for testing, to create capacity in the health service. Now we find ourselves in September and the minister is saying we need to substantially increase the testing. Yes, we do. But then he really has to come into the Dáil and answer questions about what was being done to prepare ourselves for winter. They've always known winter was coming. They didn't have a timeline for the virus. So the best thing to do is to be prepared. And my fear is we are heading into winter unprepared.
Yeah, and I'll bring Marie in just one moment, but I just want to put that to you, Damon, because Cillian de Gascoigne was acknowledging that as well, that we are now at a stage where we've got to look at our capacity. The capacity has to increase. He wasn't prepared to put a number on it, but clearly we don't have enough capacity for testing in the system. And we saw as well, we read this morning that we're Dr. Ronan Glynn has written to the minister looking for greater investment in the public health area, because we need more contact tracing and we need to be able to do that more thoroughly. What were we doing for June, July and August?
Well, exactly. I mean, and in fairness, what Stephen Donnelly said was that's why he got agreement by Cabinet last week to spend an extra $600 million on the Winter Initiative. A big part of that is putting in extra staff.
No, this is completely separate to the Winter Initiative, so you've asked now, Minister.
Yeah, but you've asked a question about what he said about the testing and tracing more staff. So what he secured with that $600 million is a portion of that money is for an extra 2,000 staff to be put into the system for contracting and tracing to reinforce what was there already.
But why are we only thinking about putting in place the money now, which then we'll have to start a recruitment process?
To be clear,
should we not have those people in place right now?
That recruitment process has already started. The HSE, Paul Reid himself said, I think at this stage there's over 800 staff in that section. To be clear, and originally the capacity around the testing and tracking was staff that were seconded from other areas of government. And they're being replaced now with permanent staff to carry on with that, because it's becoming obvious that we're going to have to keep the capacity there at 100,000 and go beyond that if need be. Last week there was over 80,000 tests carried out, and that's important we do that. And so now you're putting in a permanent team of new people, and that's their sole job. So people were redeployed earlier because there was a reduction in the need. But what's going to happen with this virus is at different times, over the next 6 to 9 months, we're going to need different capacity in the system.
But were we short-sighted going back? That we basically transferred people from all sorts of disciplines around the health service into this contact tracing and this end of things for months on time. But we should have known. There was never a suggestion, really, even back in March or April, that by the time we got to September that the virus was going to disappear.
Yeah, and
nobody believed Donald Trump.
No one said that, and the work has continued in that space to develop that system. But what Stephen Donnelly is referring to now is actually securing the extra money he needs to copper fasten that and that team of people. So he's strengthening the system. But again, I'm being very clear here. Over 80,000 tests last week. We are at a capacity which everyone wants us to get to be able to do 15,000. There was 14,900 done on the 18th of September. So the capacity is there. But if we need more, we have to put more money into it.
But the capacity is not there, Damien, for tracing. So, I mean, swabbing is one thing, and swabbing is important because the whole process doesn't happen unless you have the swab. But the swab is only a very minor part of it, really. What we should be doing, what we should have in place, are the people who are trained to do the contact tracing.
Yeah.
No, just bear with me for a second. We don't have that. We had months to put that in place. There was never any suggestion that the people who were seconded or anything other than a temporary arrangement. They were always going to go back to their jobs. We knew back in August when Sinn Féin were publishing our winter initiative and what we believe need to be done early August. That's when the planning should have been well underway. It obviously wasn't. And I would love to have the faith that you have in the recruitment processes within the HSE. But I know, and you know as well, that recruitment within the HSE can often be very slow. It can take weeks, if not months in some instances. So, you know, in order to have the dynamic tracing that we need in place, we need those people in post, trained and working now, and they're not. And I think the lead time is going to be months, not weeks. And that's very, very regrettable as we head into the winter. And we see the time that was lost. There was no modular capacity put into the HSE,
Staff.
Okay. To be fair,
okay, very quickly, because I want to move on to.
Okay. Yeah. To be fair, Katie, what Louise is referring to is a request by Ronan Glynn to increase the contracting and do more with it. That request will be met. But I know people that are involved in the contract tracing, and they have been doing that. And Dr. Cillian referred to that as well. The contract tracing that's been asked to be reinforced was happening in many cases as well. But now we're doing even more with that. And that's what has to happen, because that's the advice all over the world. That's what Ronan Glynn is asking for. And the government will respond to doing that, of course, to it.
Yeah, but I do think that it does. We're well into this now.
And the previous person before me reinforced the point that contract tracing has been happening. I think it's an impression we're trying to give.
In some cases, it was equally acknowledged that it wasn't happening.
Yes, but
it should be happening in universities.
The key here is to have a standard across the country, which is
something that else that we need happening right now. And I'll just put it to you, Louise O'Reilly, an all island approach, because clearly what is happening now in Donegal and along the border is a very serious matter, and we surely should be more further along the line in terms of an all-Ireland, an all-island approach.
No, absolutely. And indeed, if the powers that be in Dublin had been listening to Sinn Féin back in March, we probably would be. I think it's very welcome that the CMOs have made a joint statement. We've been calling for an all-Ireland strategy. We have an all-Ireland strategy when it comes to animal health. I don't think it's a stretch to have an all-Ireland strategy when it comes to population health. In fact, I think to consider the island as one epidemiological unit makes absolutely clear and common sense. And I do welcome the fact that the CMOs have issued a joint statement and that the Ministers for Health are talking. But that should be done on a regular basis. It shouldn't take a spike in one area or another area to preempt this. This should actually be happening
I want to
on, in a much more detailed way and on a much more established basis.
It was confirmed a few minutes ago on this programme by others that the public health teams are in regular contact, are working together. And while it's not ideal that there's two different jurisdictions on this, there has been intensive engagement over the last 4 or 5 months from the two working together on this. And it is shown this week that, and it was very, very important yesterday, our two chief medical officers came out together, issued a joint statement with a very, very strong
message. But there should be more of that, Damien. That's what we're saying. There should be more of that.
Okay, I want to bring in Marie, because I want to move on as well to the cuts in the pandemic unemployment payment that came in this week. Marie Sherlock, are you with us there?
Yes, I am.
Marie, a lot of controversy around those cuts, and of course the timing of those cuts as well, on the day that it was announced that Damien English here and 9 of his colleagues were getting special advisors.
Yeah, I think the really important thing to bear in mind is that the July stimulus, the package that we currently have that the government announced during the summer to provide for government, which involved the cuts to the pandemic unemployment payment, were made at a time where the COVID numbers were extremely low, and of course we were just coming out of total lockdown at the time. We now have this highly ironic situation where the much needed welfare payments to those who don't have a job and are out of their job because they can't go to work, like those in the arts, like those in hospitality, we're seeing cuts to them in their PUP, and the restrictions being tightened, and there is a very serious question for government now as to what they're going to do over the coming months. I think there's a really important point here with regards to how government overall is responding to this. And I must say, I'm feeling very frustrated that since the reopening of the economy during the summer, we're continually on the back foot, both with regards to communication. I think there's confusion now as to what precisely people should and should not be doing. We had the publication of the five levels, the five and a bit levels last week. There's confusion with regards to the tracing, like only learning in the last number of days that 48 hours is not sufficient. And that I don't think people have that understanding with regards to the incubation period and the shedding period. So in terms of actually monitoring our movements for 4 or 5 days, I think that's a real issue. And I think the government now needs to paint a picture for the country over the next year to year and a half, because a vaccine is going to be the only exit strategy out of this pandemic.
Okay.
But this is really important, right? So in terms of welfare payments to those who can't go to work, we're going to see these restrictions coming time and again.
Let me put that to the Minister, Marie. Where are we at now? Because there was some indications earlier in the week that we could be looking at a reversal of these pandemic unemployment payment cuts. Kind of quashed, I think, as the week drew to an end, and that was being dampened down and the expectations of that was being lowered.
I think the request was, and the acknowledgement to look at, was in various sectors, do you need to do more with supports across the system, be it for unemployment, be it for people in certain categories or on subsidies.
Do we?
Or again, and that's what a budget is for. And every minister has said, just to finish it, the budget is in a few weeks' time, and then we also
Restrictions are now until the 9th of October. Can I please address this?
I am not giving any illusion that the payments are going to change in the budget. I'm just saying...
Do you think they should?
I want to make a point, first of all. Marie has asked for long-term direction from where government is going. just from the pandemic, unemployment payment came in and was set at €350, which is €150 more than what it would normally be, would be. That was a decision made as an emergency measure for about 12 weeks, in recognising then that we had to put in place supports right out to next April, and to commit to that long-term decision around that, the payment has been reduced by €50 down to €300 and €250 for others as well, because we want to make sure we have the resources to pay it out that long, because it's a much longer commitment. I think it's a wise commitment to do that out to April, and of course it doesn't fully supplement the wage loss that you have, but we're doing all we can to get people back to work, and there's been significant progress made on that.
Do you think this should be reversed for some sectors that are particularly badly hit, or maybe some regions that are particularly
badly hit? And to be honest with you, my key focus, I'm in the Department of Jobs along with the Taoiseach there, our focus is to get people back to work, and that's what I think we have to try to target, and there's been a lot of progress
you
made.
You still haven't
that
answered that question.
No, because it's not a question to be answered. The pandemic payment has been set out
to
next April.
No, it is a question to be answered, Damien.
The clarity is given around the payment rates out to next April. What people are calling for
is... You think that is fair enough? You don't really believe that a reversal of the cuts that were introduced this week is on the cards?
Don't paint me as hard as... We'd all love to see it as a higher payment.
I'm just trying to establish where you're coming from.
Yes, to be clear, the payment is set out, right? My focus is to get people back into work so they don't have to rely on this payment at all. The commitment with the reduced amount on the payment is to be able to... We can have it for longer.
Okay, no, we understand that, but...
Okay, so let's look at the reality for people who are dealing with this. My colleague, Claire Curran, the TD for Roscommon, has requested from the Minister for Social Protection information about the average earnings that people were on. So the people who are currently on 300 were previously earning €568 per week on average. So the cut for them is €268. Add to that the fact their kids are going back to school. They're getting the little envelopes for the voluntary contributions. Any bills that they might have skipped while they didn't have the money during the summer, those bills are still there. We are facing what MABS and others are describing as a tsunami of household debt. Now is not the time to cut those vital supports for people who are in absolutely dire straits. They want to go back to work. They were working away. They were working in industries that were shut for public health reasons. They were not shut because they weren't viable. These people didn't have time to plan, and they need those vital supports.
Okay,
they want to get back to work.
So now you say, yes, that's clearly Sinn Féin policy and Labour policy and other the policy of other people.
But if now is not the time, when is the time?
Is it your policy that this 350 payment should be reintroduced and put in place indefinitely? Is that
for the duration of this pandemic, those supports are going to be necessary. And you've got people, take for example people working in the arts, they might get one gig, they have to turn that gig down because they will lose their supports. That's not right. It needs to be flexible, it needs to be responsive, but it needs to be there.
But when we stop being able to borrow the enormous amounts of money that we are currently borrowing at the rate we're able to borrow right
Casey,
now,
we're going to see people going back to work, and we want to see people going back to work. We want to see people going back to work safely, but those supports are going to be necessary, because what's happening in Donegal could potentially, and we hope it won't, but could potentially be happening in other areas. But as we move, and we want to see from the government an effective strategy to move us from where we are down to level one, that's what we need to see from the government. We need to see the economy being able to safely open up, and then those supports will not be required. But for the moment, those people still have bills to pay. They are still facing what others are MABS and others are describing as a tsunami of household debt.
One of those debts is obviously people's mortgages, and a lot of people, not just people on their homes, but business mortgages and all of that. Bank breaks have kept people afloat since the pandemic came into play. Pascal Dunhu is going to be meeting the banks on Monday. He said, and this is a quote, "I will be asking them to demonstrate sensitivity and understanding to the circumstances of all those who are affected by this."
He needs to go further than
and
that.
And again, sorry,
Katie.
Just let Marie in.
Sorry. The minister needs to go further than that and ask tell the banks that they need to extend the mortgage breaks. Like at the moment, there is just under 20% of SMEs who have availed of a break, and over 6.1% of the value of all mortgages have availed of the break. And that is going to be vital to keeping households above water over the winter months. Like there has been some talk about, oh, well, the banks and that they're going to be loss making. There is macroprudential regulations now around the banking structure in Ireland that have provided for situations like this, adverse situations that the banks can actually take the hit. And there's a second issue that is with regards to the the interest charges that banks have been applying on those who've availed mortgage breaks. The banks, my colleague Jed Nash during the week has been talking about the very high rates that households are going to be accumulating because they've depended on those mortgage breaks. So we need to see two things on Monday. We need to see an extension of the mortgage break.
Okay.
We need to see the interest rate put to zero on the extension. And we also need to see, and this is really, really important, an extension of the eviction ban for tenants. Because just to go back to the point.
Okay, here, we have so many issues to get through
people.
And I want to put that to the minister before we move on. In terms of the attitude of the finance minister when he goes in to talk to those bankers on Monday, I'd be asking them to demonstrate sensitivity.
Okay,
it doesn't really inspire confidence he's going to come out with
a
deal.
I think, in fairness to Pascal, the way he approaches his business, he does his business at those meetings. And the last time he had a similar meeting, we had a positive result of a six-month forbearance for people with mortgages, because we totally understand that people are under unbelievable pressure trying to match all the bills, cover all the costs.
But asking
I think I'm entitled to a little bit of a minute here just to try to answer some stuff here, right? So again, you mentioned about unemployment payments, wage subsidies. The government have had to look at this situation and respond in a range of measures, okay? And the total cost over this year and next year is probably going to be close to 50 billion to dealing with this virus. So we have to try to see what are the best ways to intervene to help people. Absolutely. The banks working with their customers with forbearance, giving them time to get through this, is essential. That has happened up to now. On Monday, Pascal Dunne will sit down with them again, and I expect he will be extremely clear with them what he expects them to do. And that's what we need here, because people do need extra time and space and help to get through this year and into next year. The government has not held back in supports across the board here, with wage subsidies, with restart grants, with the pub payment extensions. I know everybody wants them to be higher, but we have to try to balance this out for as long as we possibly can. So far, the commitments are out to next April across all the various supports. If need be, of course, they'll be extended at that time. But that's the commitment, which is quite a lengthy commitment on behalf of the taxpayer. And someone has to pay this bill at the end of the day. It will cost close to 50 billion. We have to work our way through this and try to reach out to every as best we possibly can.
Okay. The payment breaks are going to be up for many people on Wednesday. Pascal Donoghue is meeting with the banks on Monday. So it's lastminute.com. If you are one of those families who has taken a payment break on your mortgage because you just don't have the shillings to pay it, let's be honest, that's why they took the break, and you are waiting from the government and you hear what Pascal Donoghue is saying, which is actually, I'm going to talk nicely to them and see what they will do. People want action on this, Damien. Let's be frank. They want to know how much is going to be extended. They also want to know, why are we not doing what they're doing in Germany, in Spain, in Italy, in Portugal, where they've been given 12 months? It's just simply a bit of breathing space that people need. You know, but people have lost their jobs. They're in an awful situation. They have, as I have said, this tsunami of household debt that is coming at them. And they want to know that the government is going to be proactive, that the government is going to be on their side and stand up to the banks. And all of this nice talk, and I'm going to ask them, and I'm going to leave it till the absolute last minute. These payment breaks are running out for people on Wednesday, and he's meeting them on Monday. That isn't good enough. I don't think anyone would suggest that it is.
I think in fairness, when it comes to Pascal Dunne, you have to judge him on his results. The last time the situation was in front of him, we had a 6-month arrangement with the banks. Let's judge what happens next week.
I'll judge him on the impact that he's having on the people who are coming into my clinics, Damien, and they are in bits with worry. They're in bits with worry. Well, then you will know they want action and they don't want lastminute.com as usual.
Okay, I want to bring in Marie again, because I want to talk a little about the sick pay provision. And this is a Labour proposal to introduce an entitlement to statutory sick pay. Marie, it's been kicked down the road to some degree.
Oh, it has. So I think it's important just for your listeners to understand, Katie, that in this country, workers do not have access to that basic employment right of paid sick leave. They're entirely reliant on the benevolence of their employers or if they have a collective agreement in their workplace. And Ireland is only one of just 5 countries across the European Union. So there's 22 other EU member states that have that basic employment right of paid sick leave. And we saw on Wednesday the government issue their proposal to kick the can effectively down the road for 6 months in terms of deliberating about sick pay. And 6 months workers do not have 6 months. They need it now, in particular in the context of COVID-19. We have a COVID illness benefit, and you know it's €350 per week, but that's less than half of all of the average private sector weekly wage. So if you're a worker, low wage worker or a worker in average wages, and you know, get up in the morning and you've got a symptom, you've got a very difficult decision to make there. Am I going to go to work or am I going to stay at home and be out of pocket?
Okay.
And it's a really important issue for all workers in this country to have that certainty going into the winter. And I think there's a really
and as you say, particularly in a pandemic where people have to make decisions about whether
really
they are going to get hit in the pocket
we're in a very particular place now with Dublin, Donegal, in terms of lockdown, in terms of the restrictions. We need to get buy-in from the general public, and paid sick leave is really important to doing that.
Okay, let me put that to Damien English.
Yeah, okay, a short time, 3 points. The illness benefit is there and was increased up to €350. Absolutely most important. The taxpayer pays for that, okay? And people pay PRSI and so on. The Taoiseach has committed, as has the other two senior ministers, that we wanted to use the 6 months to analyse this to see how we could do this. He has said it now repeatedly this week. We are prepared to introduce a statutory pay scheme. But it's how do you do that and who burdens the cost?
Why do we need the 6 months to think about this?
Because if you bring the scheme in, it might have a major impact on a lot of small businesses who are barely able to open the door today, who are barely viable. And if you introduce a statutory pay scheme, sick pay scheme, but they have to fork out and pay for that without any discussion with them, So just to be clear, in the 6 month period, you engage all the relevant departments, all the stakeholders to work out if we'd like to do this, which I think most of us would like to do it, well, how do we do it and how do we balance the cost of this? Because small business can't handle this cost as
of now.
And
that's nobody is saying that we hope the pandemic is better by 6 months. But the key point here... The key point is there can be targeted supports, and certainly we'll be saying this in our pre-budget submission, that there should be targeted supports to those employers who can't afford to pay. And yes, there are lots of employers across the country at the moment who are trying to get themselves back up and back into business. But there are employers, there's three cohorts of employers out there. There's employers who do pay paid sick leave and can afford to do it. There's employers who can afford to do it but choose not to, and then there's those cohort of employers who will need support. But you can have targeted support.
Okay, let me bring in, I've got Neil MacDonald, the CEO of the Irish Association of Small and Medium Enterprises, on the line. Neil, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie.
Yeah, were you listening to Marie there?
Yes, and this is a topic that comes up every now and then, especially when we have large-scale absence from work due to something. I mean, this issue arose in the big snow in 2010. It arose during Storm Ophelia. And every time it happens, there's a reaction, especially in the Dáil, to make the employers pay. The difficulty is that there are employers, as Damien has said there, that cannot afford to pay. But there's a much more fundamental issue. This is what our social insurance system is for. Yet our social insurance system does not function as a social insurance system. It functions as a tax system. And it's used simply as a means of collecting money that all goes into the big pot and it's spent in current general expenditure. Those countries in Europe that Maria referred to that pay sick pay, and I saw one of the trade unions tweeting about the Netherlands during the week having 2 years paid sick pay. But of course, SMEs are insured by the state against the liability that's incurred when they do that. And there's also a very intrusive occupational health regime to get people who are ill back to work. So we have to understand that these things have to be paid for. And at least if I look on one bright side, one good thing out of COVID, it is going to be that it's going to put the spotlight on our social insurance system. We are going to have to reform PRSI so we don't keep walking into this minefield.
Okay,
sick pay in at every time, actually, but most especially in the time of a global pandemic. In fact, I was sitting in this studio in March when I said it. Sick pay is an instrument of public health. It is extremely important that no worker, no matter what they are doing, wakes up in the morning and decides that they cannot afford to take it, that they can't afford not to take a chance, that they have to go to work if they have even a small symptom. We need them to have the confidence that they can stay at home. In the meantime, and I'm not suggesting for a moment, by the way, that with one stroke of a pen we can bring in a statutory sick pay scheme. I know that it is going to take time. Of course it's going to take time and there has to be consultation, but you have to look at what you can do in the short term, because there isn't anyone, not sitting at the cabinet table, not sitting in the Dáil, not sitting in any living room up and down the country, who wants a worker who is symptomatic to have to go to work because they don't have a choice. So we have to put those supports in place.
Just to be clear.
And likewise, sorry, Damien, let me finish.
Come on, Louise, don't mislead
the
public.
For those people who have kids at home, Okay, so their kids are sent home. They can't go to work. Supports need to be in place. So what the government should be doing is looking at the force majeure scheme, looking at extending that as a buffer for people while the consultation takes place. 6 months is not necessary. That consultation can be done and can be done quickly. And we need to see a real, real effort on the part of the government here to move this forward, because workers deserve that. The very people that we stood and applauded are the ones that kept us going through the pandemic. The low paid workers who don't have access to sick pay, who don't have access to time off work with pay to mind their kids if they're sent home.
Okay, okay. And that's a really important point for people in terms of the force majeure. Sorry, just to say.
And the force majeure, sorry, Marie, just let me finish. The force majeure leave should be extended. It should be extended temporarily to allow for those discussions to take place and to take account of that situation.
Okay,
because nobody
wants workers
to have
to make that
decision. Okay,
we're almost out of time, so I just want to put that issue, the force majeure issue.
To be very clear, again, the force majeure is used in emergency situations, and it was always there even before COVID. And employers, to be fair to them, generally are being very cooperative with employees around this space. Over 60,000 people.
Some, Damien, some.
Over 60,000 people have availed of the payment that if you're related to COVID, you have to be off work and have drawn that down. The Taoiseach, who is in charge.
Okay, will
business,
we be looking
He has committed this week that he wants to introduce a statutory
six
pay scheme.
Too long,
but
Damien.
You just can't do it overnight
six
because it's a major step change in Irish employment situation. Okay. A major step change.
Okay.
And it's
okay,
important we make the change.
I know we will be coming back to this because it's a huge issue for so many people, but we're going to have to leave it there. Enjoy the rest of your weekend and we'll see you back here again at 1 o'clock on Saturday.
Saturday with Katie Hannan. Listen back on the RTE Radio Player app.
Saturday with Katie Hannan was produced by Mary O'Hagan. The broadcast coordinator was Elaine Conlon. Research was by Andrew Fleming. And sound was by Sheila Neve-Whale.